Accession number 9168, rule number 13.
Mr. Amat, reel 13.
When we got back to Bombay after being in the transit camp, we had a meal and then we boarded a ship which was much smaller than the one which brought us out to India. I think it was about 5,000 tonnes. And the draft I was on, there was about 60 of us all told, got on this ship, and amongst the passengers I noticed there was quite a few Arabs in their Arab dress with their turbans and flowing gowns, and also Arab horses tethered on the well deck. And anyway, we sailed on the evening tide and went up the coast of India. You could see it in the distance. But then we eventually got out into the Persian Gulf, or towards the Persian Gulf, but we stopped at Karachi. And we only stopped there for a few hours, and we took on more passengers and some stores. And then we were off again up the Persian Gulf. The weather was quite fine, and it was quite a pleasant journey. And we didn't pass many ships on the way, except in the Arab dhows that ply all along that coast there. But I think it was about the fifth day we arrived at, we woke up on the fifth morning, and the ship's engines had stopped and we were anchored, and in the distance all around us was sort of mud flats and channels. And very soon a launch came out with the pilot on board, and once he got on board and got things organised, the engine started and we steamed up through the estuary of the River Tigris. And as I say, it was all mud flats and very little to see. It got very hot and steamy and humid. But eventually we arrived, I think it was about the afternoon, at the port of Basra, tied up there and disembarked. And we marched to a camp just outside the town, a tented camp with the old army bell tents. And we stayed there for 3 or 4 days. The thing about the camp was the fact that being at the estuary of the river and it was very hot weather, the whole area was infested with flies and mosquitoes and all sorts of flying insects. And I remember the when we went to the cookhouse to get our tea or our dinner, when we got back to our tent, there was no proper dining room erected. The time we got back, a mug of tea was covered black with flies. And to drink it, we had to scoop them out with our hand before we could drink it. And the flies were so vast that during the day, they pestered us, so that we got the trick from some of the other troops who'd been there to shut all the flaps down, stop inside, shut all the flaps down, so that it got more or less dark. And this fooled the flies. They thought it was night time, so they all settled on the walls of the tent and left us in peace for a little while. And of course we had to open the flaps again to get a bit of fresh air. But it's quite an experience. And after we'd been there a few days, we went down to the docks and got on board a paddle steamer which was going to take us upriver. And it was quite a pleasant journey, and we could see along the route all the Arab villages and the camel convoys going along, and nothing really happened. The only thing is a terrible stench coming from the river, and it was that like that all the time, more or less, until we got to Baghdad. And here we disembarked, and the whole draft I was on were taken by lorry to a camp which was number one armour car company headquarters. And This camp was about 3 miles from Baghdad, and situated on a very flat area of land. And the thing about the camp that I remember is that it was made of barrack rooms erected very similar to the old Saxon mud and wattle type. Well, actually, that's what it was. The walls were mud and wattle, and the roof was thatched. There was no windows as such, but the walls were about 12 feet high, and just under the eaves was an opening. This used as an area of light into the hut, and also ventilation. Both ends of the hut were wide open, and to allow air to get through, because it was very hot. And we had wooden beds and personal mosquito nets, a thing like a large bag that you wrapped yourself in, and hopefully at night, hopefully kept the mosquitoes away. And there was punkahs to keep the air moving, worked by native boys. And this is a rope pulled along from one end of the bungalow, so that the punkahs, which were struts of wood with a large canvas drop cloth, which waved about from side to side and kept the air moving, and so that you weren't too hot and humid. Anyway, that was one of the things I noticed. Another thing was we only had to work during the time we were there up to about 11 o'clock, and then all work ceased and everybody was ushered back into the bungalows, and we had our tiffin, which is the lunch, at 12 o'clock, and after that you were free until about 4 o'clock. There was no work done at all during the day, no parades or nothing like that. But after a few days there, along with another half a dozen other chaps, was posted on orders to number 2 Armour Company, who were situated up well up north in Mosul. And to get there, we went down to the town of Baghdad and boarded what we used to call a Dopice railway. It's a small gauge railway. Dopice in Hindustani meaning 2 annas. In other words, it was a small change. That's why we called it Dopice Railway. Anyway, it was about 2'6" wide, the rails, and the carriages were open-ended and just seated 4 people with a door at either side, very similar to the suburban trains in London, only, of course, much smaller. We travelled on this after a couple of days, and we stopped now and again for a break and food. And alongside the railway was laid alongside the River Tigris, so it was quite interesting going along, see the native fishermen and all the native life going on around the river. And we got to a place called Shergat, and here we got off the miniature railway and went to a camp where there was a subsection of armour cars. That's 2 armour cars and a 30 underweight lorry and a couple of motorbikes. That was all that was there, plus the one officer and a corporal and about a dozen men to man these armoured cars. We stopped in this camp. Oh, by the way, the tents in this camp were a different type altogether. They were, I understand afterwards, an Indian type tent. They were what's called ridge tents, and they were quite roomy and quite different to the old army bell tent. And you could get 8 full-size beds, 4 on either side, in these tents. And during the day, the whole of the area around the tent area was the railing was taken down so that the air could circulate, and it was very hot and humid during the day. I remember one thing about the camp was that we were infested with flies, but not so much as we were in Basra. But they had an ingenious device there of a trough that one sees pigs feeding out of, and a couple of struts either end with a roller on like a mangle, and this was attached to another roller which went inside the box at the bottom, and a canvas thing was put over the rollers like a curtain, and if somebody turned the handle at the top, the canvas used to roll right underneath the liquid which was put in the bottom, and so the whole thing was wet, and after you'd done it a couple of times, the whole canvas was wetted with this anti-fly stuff. And although it was anti-fly, it attracted them. I expect there was a certain amount of syrupy stuff in there, and as you went by, you were instructed to, anybody who went by, to give it a couple of turns so that all the flies that had stuck on there in that time were immersed in the liquid at the bottom. I think it was rather effective, because several times I looked in, there was hundreds of flies, dead flies in the bottom. Another thing about this camp was the fact that we had a native cook who used to dish up our meals, and he's also a sort of canteen warrior. He used to look after an improvised canteen, and he'd have this fire going of a night time about 6 o'clock, and you could go into his the tent where he operated and buy fried eggs and chips, and used to usually congregate there. One of the chaps there used to have, because there was no entertainment as such, and we had to make our own, but there was always somebody who was ready to have a joke or a laugh or something. But one of the things we'd done there, we used to use these this 30-hundredweight lorry. By the way, they were Fiat lorries, manufactured by an Italian firm, and they were ex-wartime stuff that was bought by the War Office. We used to get in the lorry and drive down to the River Tigris, which was some distance away, and we'd take a box of Mills' grenades with us. And by the way, there was everybody more or less had a pet dog they'd got hold of from somewhere, and used to keep these dogs and as pets and feed them and have quite a bit of fun with them. And these dogs used to run alongside the lorry, and as the dust flew, they were choking and spitting, trying to keep up with it. Anyway, we got to the riverbank, and then we get out of the lorry and take these Millsy, box of Millsy bombs around the side, and then one or two of them pick up a Millsy grenade and throw it into the, take the pin out and throw it in the river, and then all sort of flattened down on the ground after the explosion, and then look up and have a look to see if there's anything happening. Several times, because it was illegal to do really, and we weren't supposed to use equipment like that, but very often we got quite a load of fish. The explosion stunned the fish that was in the vicinity of the blast, and you could swim out and pull them in and take them back with us for our meal. That's one of the activities we had there. Another thing was, I spent about a fortnight, I suppose, there. Eventually, I and one or two others were posted back to the headquarters at Mosul. And by the way, this Shagat we was at was the railhead of a four-gauge railway which was built by the Germans during the war for the Turks when they invaded Iraq sometime before the war broke out, actually, and their idea was to colonise, the Turkish idea was to colonise Iraq, and the Germans have supplied the equipment and built the railway for them down as far as Shirdet. Anyway,
what had your duties been?
Big one.
What had your duties been at Shirgat?
Well, I was just one of the rest of the team, manning the armoured cars and the Vickers guns, and we didn't see any. Never went out in them actually, not as an active part of the unit at all. It's anyway, I was posted to headquarters, as I say, at Mosul, and the officer told me to take over the wheel and drive one of the armoured cars which were being taken back with the other chaps who were following in the lorry. And I know there was no roads as such, it was just a track that you followed, and hopefully in the right direction. And then sometimes you come across what they call a wadi, and that's a river bank or a stream bank that slopes steeply on either side, and sometimes there was water running through the bottom. And it was quite a job to negotiate one of these, they were Rolls Royce armour cars, by the way, down this slope and up the steep bank at the other side to get back on the level ground again. Anyway, it's quite an experience, but we managed it all right. And when we got to Mosul, reported to the headquarters there, and the headquarters was in a stone building about a mile and a half outside the town of Mosul. And the stone building itself was alongside the stone building, there was a tented camp. And the camp site was, the tents were the same as I'd been in before at Shirgat, the ridge type. And although we were farther north than we were at Shirgat, during the time we were there, it was the height of summer, and I remember we had iron bedsteads there, the old hospital type iron bedstead with the springs. And as we rolled back the railing of the morning and the sun came up, anywhere near midday, if you got anywhere near these iron bedsteads, you actually got burnt with the sun rays on them. You couldn't touch them at all. And there we used to keep what's called a cargill. That's a canvas bag that held half a gallon of water with a small neck, which tied with string, and used to hang up on the tent pole. And each one of them had one of these issued, and you filled this from a well and kept it there for your own use during the day. And it's marvellous, really, because although the beds got hot, the beds got hot with the sun and all that, the fact that these bags, canvas bags, were hanging up with the air circulating around them kept the water quite cool. Another thing about this place was one of the sources of water was this deep well quite near the building, circular in shape, or it must have been about 20 feet in diameter, went down very deep, and alongside the well was a water wheel, and it wasn't one of those that was driven by the water, but it was the actual wheel itself was driven by a bullock, a water buffalo, set in a circle that he traversed, and this turned a pole, which also in turn turned this wheel. And attached to this wheel was a chain which dropped down into the bottom of the well. And on this chain was slats of wood carrying cup-shaped metal containers which brought the water up each time it revolved and dropped it onto a wooden plank which was directed into a stream which carried the water to irrigate all the surrounding land. Quite a unique way of getting over it. We also used to use this well for bathing, and we dropped down some steps and just drop into the water at the side, holding on to the, there was an iron rail around it, and that's the only way we could have a bath or wash ourselves, apart from the ablutions, which was a bench with water running through it that you used, you know, during the day. But I was there for some days anyway. We were engaged on fatigues most of the time, although once I went out with some armour cars, I drove one, and we done some manoeuvres, and there was one or two scares about the Kurds coming across the Tigris from Kurdistan, and we went out and done some stunts there, but nothing really happened of any consequence. But when I was on one of these fatigue parties, Sergeant Major came up to me and said, "How would you like to take over a job in the officer's mess?" Said the NCO in charge there had been taken off because of sickness, and there was a vacancy, and the OC had asked him to find somebody suitable to take it over. And I said, "Well, I don't know what I've never done." He said, "Well, that's all right. You report to the OC tomorrow morning, and I'll fix that you're interviewed." So I went up the following morning. The OC was a Captain Spencer, and he was an ex-RASC officer who'd been seconded to the tank corps, and he asked me whether I'd like to take over, and he got my record in front of him, and he said he would make me a paid Lance Corporal, and dated from that day, and told me more or less what my duties would be. And so I accepted, and the next day I reported to the officer's mess, which was situated about 200 yards away from the main camp, in a stone building that belonged to one of the Iraqi businessmen, I suppose, earlier during the war. And he handed it over to the British for their use as an officer's mess. One thing about this building was the fact that it was large and airy, but it was single-storied, and one large room was on one side of a gully that used to run right through the house from the back to the front. And this gully was a stone-built channel, which was about 6 inches wide and about 6 inches deep, and fresh water used to run through there, right through the whole of the compound and through the middle of the house, dividing one room from another. But as it went in the house, the open part, which was in the open outside, was covered over with stone slabs, so you never actually saw the water, although you could hear it running. And one side of the house was divided into a dining room, the other side was divided into a ante room for the officers. And I had a staff of one Indian cook, two British ORs, other ranks, an Armenian waiter, who had been a waiter in civil life, and two what we call boys. They were really boys, but they used to, in the army in those days, anybody who was sort of attached to the army and was young, they used to call them boys. They were Armenian too, as well as the waiter. Anyway, I picked up the threads of this job and was explained what I got to do, and we had to every day we had to prepare an 8-course dinner And that's at night, and that used to take place about 7 o'clock or half past. And my job was to make out menus right throughout the week. I was allotted a car and a driver every day to go down the bazaar and buy stuff for the mess. And I was given a cheque every 2 or 3 days. I wanted to get money, and I'd take the car and go down to the bank in Mosul and draw cash out, mostly in the form of silver rupees, which was rather unique, as, of course, I suppose they held their currency value as against the notes. But the money we had then was paid out in rupees, and I think it was paid out at the rate of 15 rupees to the pound. So if you're, so you had 15 rupees if your money was £1 a week, which it was more or less in those days for a private soldier. That's it's quite an interesting job, this was, really. And although I'd never sort of taken over any responsibility before, I seemed to fall into it quite easily. I used to go down every day into the bazaar and buy half a dozen chickens, or live, by the way, and all the any fish that was going, or any other commodities I wanted for the mess, you see. Then I'd come back and supervise the not necessarily cooking, but because the cook, all I had to do with him, he'd give him a menu and he'd work out what he wanted and to do the cooking. And he was very good. The only thing about him was the fact that you couldn't trust him with money, because if you paid him, any time you paid him, you'd lose sight of him for a couple of days, and he'd be found laying in one of the brothels or one of the disused places in the town, drunk with arak. So we used to pay him once a month, but we used to work it with the OC.